Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Hey, pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Hi, I'm Consequences Sound film editor Dominic Suzanne Mayer, host of Filmography, a filmmaker's podcast. On our new season, we're spotlighting the works of one of the true 20th century masters, Stanley Kubrick. From Fear and Desire to Eyes Wide Shut, we're examining the performances, stylistic choices, music, and all the nuances of these cinematic and cultural touchstones. Look out for new episodes of Filmography every week, new directors every quarter, and subscribe via iTunes or wherever you procure fine podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of This Must Be The Gig. I'm your host, Leo Phillips, and this is your little backstage pass to the world of live music. And I am now reaching you from a sparkling hotel room in the heart of the mystical island that is Montreal, in my very terrible French accent. That's right, it's peak festival season, which means I'm out on the road once again getting you all the best magic from around the world, and this time I'm at the incredible Oceaga. We are mid-Oceagaing. It's just a hop and a skip and a jump away from Lollapalooza, and these two festivals really do share some of the best and brightest names on kind of the exact same weekend, but there's something special in the Canadian water as well. This weekend we had the wonders of Yeah Yeah Yeahs, which if you know me, you know I love the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and Florence and the Machine, not to mention the superb Montreal locals like Matt Holubowski and massive crowds and sterling sets from the St. Vincent, De La Soul, The National, Arctic Monkeys, Khalid, Licky Lee, and so many more. The performances weren't the only things really keeping a weekend hotter than a sizzling frying pan on my face. The scorching sun did its share as well. That said, the festival did include a massive water tank for quick bottle refills, which I loved. Nice little initiative by the festival. They also had two pole-like structures that acted like hoses to spray down this baking crowd, and fountains and swimming pools. There was even a stage floating on water. Even with all those cooling options, walking through the summer heat got my appetite raging. But luckily, food options included the greatest vegan hot dog I have ever had in my life and more delights by the amazing Chuck Hughes and Danny Smiles, two of the best Canadian chefs out there, which I learned over the weekend for the first time. But we're not really here just to talk about snacks. I have more snacks in store. By the name of three amazing acts on the bill. First, I sat down with the incomparable Anderson .Paak for a quick conversation about getting perspective on aeroplanes and his earliest concert experiences. Next, I met up with Ben Schneider, frontman of Lord Huron, to chat about folding the band's new album into their set, playing bat mitzvahs as a teen, and also his first Radiohead concert with his brother. Finally, I caught up with Bob and Julian from Franz Ferdinand right before their set for a little cheeky super sweaty chat about Julian's status as the new guy in the band, the Glasgow music scene, and exactly what happens when you play a song 800 times. Or maybe it might have been more. Oceaga seems like the biggest festival in the world when you're there, but you know, even still, it has so many little things that are kind of cozy and quite lovely about it. And I really hope that these three chats coming up really give you your own little backstage pass to the experience that I had over the weekend. And I also, lastly, want to say a quick thank you to the entire team at Oceaga, Evenco, and Montreal Canadiens. Here's me and the whole grand ocean of Oceaga wonderfulness. Enjoy!
Thank you for having me. I was looking at your machine.
That's cool.
That's a little more high tech than the other ones I've seen.
I know. So this is my like mobile.
That got compression on it and shit. Right? Effects. Can you put lots of reverb on my shit?
Thanks. Oh yeah. So the last time I saw you was in, I was thinking about it earlier actually, was in Helsinki at Flow Festival 3 years ago. I don't even know, maybe more. And people were just going, as they do, nuts.
That was one of the craziest shows. That crowd
was mad.
Huge.
Do you remember the festival at all?
I remember, yeah. Just the different types of white people I was seeing with the big heads. And like, I was like, wow, this is like... This is real, like, this is where you guys were invented, fam. Like, I loved it.
It was dope.
The crowd, the energy. Yeah. This is like, because it's Finland, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Helsinki. That's not where Bjork is from, right?
No, so she's from Iceland.
Okay, I've been there too.
How fucking amazing
is
Iceland?
Both of those were just amazing places. Iceland was crazy. Sun never
went
down.
Wait, did you play a show or did you just go on holiday?
Yeah, it was a festival. Yeah, with like Rick Ross and Big Sean. It was crazy.
Have you been to South Africa yet?
Yes, Cape Town, Johannesburg.
Yeah, I'm from Cape Town.
Cape Town's good.
That
was
love
amazing.
It
was beautiful.
Don't you think South African people are just the best?
Yes.
I know you have to say that.
I love your accents. You guys got one of the top accents.
It's kind of like a weird aunt of Australia and...
Well, I like the Afrikaans accent, you know,
Afrikaans
like the people
amazing.
That were like working in the hotels and shit. Like that, those accent, I really like that, you know? And because they speak like five languages, easy, right? I mean, it's like Europe too, you know. Everybody's ready. Like,
well, we
know,
have 11 national languages,
right? We're
so
ready. Like, language ain't nothing, bro. That's how you guys communicate. That's why you guys are so different than us.
It's beautiful.
Like, it's very. It helps to like expand your whole mental everything. So, like you guys, like you say, you're really warm out there. Really, you have a natural. A warmness to you guys in the way to
and
communicate
this,
with people.
It doesn't take much, you know, to just be lovely. I think we were talking just before we press record. We're talking about like being lovely in this industry, which is like you don't get that much.
Yeah.
But I do get that from you, and I get that from your music, and especially your live shows. So I want to go. I know we don't have much time, but I want to go right to the beginning. Do you remember the first show that you ever saw? The first one where you. Maybe that was so formative for you that you felt like, fuck, I can do this.
First show I ever saw.
Ever saw.
I feel like the first show I ever saw was Ninja Turtles at Universal Studios, like, concert.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that was the first concert experience I feel like I've ever went to.
Amazing.
Where I was like, oh, shit, this is crazy. And then after that, a couple key performances. I remember the first concerts was Earth, Wind & Fire in Las Vegas. I was a child as well.
What? How old were you?
I was probably like 12, 11. My parents took me. They were big gamblers at Caesar's Palace, and they were playing there.
Caesar's Palace.
And
I love it there.
I grew up,
it's so awful and amazing at the same time.
I grew up on other music. My mom was all she played in the house. So then I saw that concert. I was blown away.
Yeah.
Before that, my big sister took me to like Bone Thugs and Harmony and Keep Sweat.
That's amazing. How much older is she to you?
She's 10 years older.
Ah, yeah. So she was like, I'm gonna teach him a thing.
She took me to that Bone Thugs and Harmony concert, Jodeci, I think, too. It was crazy. And at the amphitheater in Universal again, too. And those are all the Ninja Turtles, Bone Thugs, Earth, Wind & Fire. Those are like my first concerts I ever saw.
Was there ever a moment where there was a particular person on stage and you were just like, I have to fucking do that? Was there any rapper or anybody
coming up seeing footage of people like James Brown and Michael Jackson and Prince. Those are the, that's like the as far as entertainer, like that's what I thought an entertainer should do, you know, like that's how you should be on stage.
Right. Yeah. And it's like have a persona.
That was the pinnacle, you know, James Brown and Michael Jackson for me when I was coming up, and then later watching like the Prince performances and stuff.
Makes you cry. It makes me cry.
Different level.
It is a different level.
Yeah. So those are the people that like I came up with. I was like, okay, entertaining and stuff. You know, when I was like young and impressionable coming up as a kid, though, I loved hip hop. So like Criss Cross and like Immature and these like groups, hip hop, R&B dance groups that dance, New Edition, and these kind of groups that dance.
Yeah,
and
entertain.
Yeah, that was like that was the thing that I always saw. Yeah.
Do you feel like that is exactly where you? Do you feel like you've come to a point where you get onto stage and it feels completely natural for you?
Yes.
Was there ever any apprehension, like ever nerves?
For sure. Because really? I'm coming from a drummer's perspective. So
exactly,
I have my whole crew.
Well, it's a good perspective. Yeah.
But my whole, I remember just people being like, just stick to drums, you know, like that's your thing. You know,
no.
I did a lot of years where I was backing up other artists, playing in church. Like that was my main experience, is playing years and years of church, being in the background, watching the best singers, watching the best performers, watching the best choirs, and the best like of the people that are just doing it for no form of fashion. That's what I grew up in, so I was not trying to get in front of those drums, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so that took a while, you know, to like develop. And
what
so,
kicked? What like what was the moment where it clicked to you that like I need to just expand? I need to be in front.
I remember I was going to school where I met a lot of my bandmates, and I remember my one of my buddies that was studying with me at the time was like, I was playing shows, doing my thing. I was going by Breezy Lovejoy, and I was doing my shows already in town, and but my bread and butter was playing drums for other artists. Like that's why I paid rent. And so I remember one day he was like, "Yo, you should just stick to drums. That's what you're." That's your thing, you know, like you're great at other stuff, but like, bro, you know, really, I think, you know, we all know, you know, he was like that. And that made me just like, oh, fuck that. I gotta do it now.
It's not, it's true. It does push you in a different direction.
Yeah.
It gives you that kick that you probably would never have gotten.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way, you know, like once he tried to put a limit on what I could do. Or say I couldn't do something.
You just want
to
punch further.
Okay, let's get it. Yeah.
But talk to me about some of the people that you've been able to meet in this crazy journey of yours now that you've been able to perform with as well.
Yeah. Let's see. Current artists. Well, I was really influenced by people like I remember seeing people like LCD Sound System, like their show, their live show.
How fucking nuts is that show?
Yeah.
With a massive disco ball.
Yes.
Like, what is that? That's a world.
Yes. It's like, but they're real musicians all just playing, you know. And I feel like they really figured out how to connect both worlds, you know. And that's what I feel like we've been
Nancy's been unreal.
Doing.
And then you have like Pat with his theremin, like with, you know, with his little fingers.
Everybody, I feel like everyone in the band plays percussion. Like everybody just will randomly go and play percussion. And it's like,
and
then their light show and then their visuals, like it's all connected. And it looks great. Like everything looks like it's all connected as one. Who else do we really enjoy watching?
Is there anybody that you've maybe like played with?
Oh yeah, I mean just playing with different people. Like the first band outside. I mean playing in church, that was an amazing thing. And then after that, like I did gigs with there was a like American Idol chick that
oh really
Haley Reinhardt.
Oh yeah,
that was like my first like professional gig. You know, so playing like these pop tunes.
How was that?
But that was sick too, man. It was like
of
the
course.
Music was still really good. She was a sweetheart, and like it got me like. To do TV stuff and playing the click and like being more like getting more disciplined, you know, because I was just playing wild and playing my own
free
shit.
Yeah, free. So yeah, great and though as well.
Playing with Sarah was exact opposite, you know. Playing with like Sarah was just funk, experimental, super stretched out soul, but groove too. Playing with someone like Omos, who is also still from the pop world too, like he would keep me in line too and like keep us playing.
But you need all those disciplines.
Yeah,
you have
great.
To keep you humble as well, to keep learning.
Yeah,
like I'm sure that you have so much still to come.
Yes,
you don't ever want to be bored or like feel like you've hit the peak.
Exactly.
You know, of your life.
Yeah.
And you toured with Jay-Z?
Never. That's one of my favorite MCs, though.
When I lost my favorite scarf when it was like 2008, and I was like waving it around. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, that was one of the first shows I saw too. I can't believe I forgot it, but it's coming back now.
It's not forgetting. That's why this whole podcast and this whole chat is the reason why I love it, is because especially with artists like you, there's something that you do on stage that a lot of people don't know how, and that you connect in such a really authentic and genuine way with your music, and that makes people connect with you. Mm. And that's always interesting. So if you like forget things, it's like, right. That's life. You know, there's so much that you, but in terms of traveling around and coming from the States, coming from where you come from, is there ever a place that has kind of stuck out in your mind? Like, do you like playing in Europe or certain places? Are there certain places that you prefer?
Yes. You know, with touring, you never get to stay in one place too long. So that's the only downside. So only thing you really get to get the perspective of where you're at is the people. Mm. So the place that we have the most contact with the people, like that's how I feel about it, you know? So the shows and the people that take care of us and take us around and take the effort to like show us
your family.
But I love Australia. That's how always amazing. Like a blur, like, because it's so much party and
so amazing
and
there.
We're always linked up with the like-minded people and our friends. We're always touring over there with our friends at the same time, so I love that. I love Europe. I just can't pinpoint what I like so much, but places that just pop out to me are like places like Germany, Paris,
they're fucking nuts,
UK, Lisbon, Brussels, and
you got to travel the world. Do you ever like, I know this is a strange question because we're sitting like in your trailer at a festival, but is there ever a moment where you can sit down and go like, this is incredible? This, like, is there ever a moment where you can have perspective?
Usually on the plane. When you're on the plane, you start looking out the window and you're like, man, this is crazy, man. Look at this. I used to fucking just get drunk in the alley.
It's true. And then you get that perspective.
Yeah, you're just sitting next to people that, like, everybody's got their story, you know? But it's like when you're on the plane, it's like, we could all go down or we could all go up.
And you realize what you've done and you're happy about it. You're all the same. Wonderful. Yeah, yeah.
So that shit's...
Are we wrapping up?
It's over, man. Sorry.
But thank you. And I'm excited to see you.
I'm excited to be seen.
Cool. Wonderful. So what have you been doing the whole day?
I just went for a swim. There's like a little there's a little man-made lake over here, so I just got out of the lake. Still drying off, I guess.
Have you played in Montreal before?
We've done a few club shows in Montreal. Never done Asiago before, though.
Oh, so you haven't?
This is our first show.
Yeah, this is my first as well.
So far, it seems like it's the upper echelon of festivals. It seems really
the
nice.
The upper echelon. You dropped echelon in like the first 2 minutes? Shit!
Sorry.
It is nice to get some time off, because I'm sure that you only have... Or maybe you do have a lot of time between stuff, but you can't really sightsee much, right?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of time to sightsee. I mean, we try to do as much as we can. I especially like to get out and get some exercise and see cities if I can.
Yeah.
You know, just to keep myself sane.
I know, because I think people also forget a lot of the times that you're not just performing.
Right.
You have all the time between sound check, between the show. So you've got a lot of...
That's kind of, I feel like, what you're actually getting paid for is all the waiting
all
around.
All the downtime.
I mean, the shows are, you know, the fun part.
Yeah. Do you enjoy performing? That might sound like a weird question,
no,
but do you enjoy
it? It's actually not a weird question, because it can get repetitive.
Yeah.
But in general, we try to keep it fresh and... It's pretty fun. I mean, you know, these are my best friends that I play with, so.
It really changes
things. We all get along really well, which I can't imagine being at each other's throats on a tour.
I know. I've spoken to people who are like, I don't want him in the interview because he's so shit. And I'm like, but you're in a band.
I know.
It's difficult. It's really difficult. But as long as you know that there's a point, I suppose, where your creativity needs to be fueled from a good relationship, I'm sure you're aware of, like, how that can affect your songwriting and...
Absolutely,
yeah.
And, you know, in a weird way, when you start to feel sick of it, that's a good sign that it's time to do something, to make something
new. To do something different.
Yeah.
But you've been now performing essentially since, like, when did your album... 2010? 2011?
2010 were our first EPs. Our first show was actually almost... It was August 6th, 2010. So
no way!
Almost exactly.
Happy anniversary!
Thank you. Thank you.
I have no idea why I make weird sounds. do you remember that first show?
Yes, I remember.
Oh, you do?
Mostly I remember the stress surrounding it.
What? What kind of stress?
We only had a very short amount of time to get ready for it. You know, I had made the EPs on my own and had to put together a band really quick. And, you know, it was a pretty big crowd just at a jazz club in Los Angeles, and I hadn't performed in a long time.
Were you in bands before, like college bands?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I was in bands with these guys in middle school.
Oh, no way. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So you've known them for so long.
A very long time. That's why we get along so well, I think. We've already gone through all the fights and stuff.
Like, yeah, you've gotten it out of your system.
Yeah.
So you weren't prepared, but you got on stage.
Yeah, we did well, though. It turned out great. I mean, the musicians we got for the band were incredible, so that helped a lot. And people liked it. And, you know, we've been on tour pretty much ever since.
But wait, did you not freak out when you first went on stage? Like, I know it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
but
it was nerve-wracking. But, you know, I just tried to be zen. And
do you know that David Byrne said that? I'm not really.
It's good advice.
But it is, though, because I think, I don't know, there's a lot of people that I've spoken to that obviously they have such a different relationship to it, and it changes and shifts. Yeah. The more your fan base grows, the more you grow as a human being. And obviously the nature of your music is not necessarily anything that can just be, you know, press play.
Right.
I can imagine you need to kind of prepare yourself
as well. A lot
of
rehearsal,
Yeah, a lot of rehearsal and stuff like that. So has it always been like that, or has it shifted over the last few years?
No, it's pretty much always been like that. We've always put a lot of emphasis on putting on a good live show, you know? I think, especially when we were first coming up, which was like the blog era.
Blog era. Yeah. Don't you miss that?
I do.
I miss that.
But there was a lot of sort of karaoke going on at that time, too, where it was just, you know, since stuff had been made in the bedrooms, people were just kind of doing karaoke to their backing tracks.
Mm.
And I think there was sort of a decline in show quality for a little while, but we were always really conscious about, you know, putting on a good show.
Yeah.
Playing our instruments.
Are you an audiophile at all? Like, how technical do you get?
I'm not that big of an audiophile. My philosophy is just if it sounds good, it sounds good. It's
right.
Not like I get really picky about using the right mic or the right preamp.
Okay.
It's just if it sounds good, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you leave that up to?
I mean, I produce the record, so I guess myself.
Yourself.
But we usually hire an engineer.
I'm like, who's the guy?
Yeah. We usually hire an engineer who has a little more know-how
a little,
about that stuff. He can advise me. So he knows what I'm going for, and he can.
But you also have to make sure, not that you need to stay in your lane, but you also have to make sure that you get enough professional assistance as well.
Yeah.
Because touring can go awfully wrong.
It's very true.
Has anything ever, like, majorly horrific happened? I'm being very hyperbolic right now, but has anything...
I mean, at the time, it feels horrific.
But
you know,
what?
Just malfunctions, or an amp stops working in the middle of a show, or... Again, I try to be as calm as I can about that stuff. In the early days, I definitely freaked out more.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of times, what can you do?
I know.
There's nothing you can do. You can have a backup, which we try to do now.
Yeah.
But even then, you never know. So I think I've learned to roll with it. And after you've played so many shows, you start to realize how something can seem extremely consequential and significant in the grand scheme, it's not a big deal.
It's a speck. Yeah.
The cold and different universe. it's not that big of a deal.
But do you find, especially over the time, not that your confidence has grown as such, because I feel like that's kind of a morose way to talk about it, but do you feel like you almost disconnect from some of the songs that you sing because you have been singing them for a while? Or do you still feel that kind of pang?
I think that's kind of what gets back to what we were talking about earlier, where you start to feel bored with it. And I think when you do, that's a bad sign. So sometimes we'll retire songs for a while just because we don't have that spark that I think is sort of necessary to pull it off live.
You right.
know? I think you can really tell when someone's not feeling it, basically. And we want to be feeling it as much as we can.
Yeah. And now with the new record?
Yeah.
Have you been touring nonstop, basically?
Pretty much since we put the record out.
And?
Yeah.
How's
and it's
that
been
beat?
Great. Yeah. It's nice, of course, to have a whole new batch of songs to pull from.
Yeah.
But it's also been nice to have some stuff that we retired a while ago, that now it's been long enough that we've...
That you can bring it back.
Bring it back.
What's a bring back one?
Well, our first...
Broughton Beckett.
Our very first EP, which was just like a three-song thing, we did have it played much off of that in many years. And so now we're going back to that.
I actually feel like I probably blogged about one of your songs back in the days. Because I kind of feel like that was around that time. Mm-hmm. Which is, I wish I had like done enough research on my own of my own work to realize what. But I kind of remember. Mm-hmm. But so your first show was in LA.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Michigan.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Ah, I live in Chicago now.
Oh, really?
So I went to Michigan for the first time last year.
Where'd you go?
Isn't it up north?
It's a peninsula.
Yes.
It's actually two peninsulas.
For the podcast people out there, we are showing our hands because you're meant to. Show your hand or something because it's the shape of a mitten.
Yeah.
A mitten.
Yeah.
We went to Traverse City. North of Traverse City. So it was like on that coast.
Beautiful up there.
Where are you from?
So I'm from downstate, but I spent a lot of time on the other coast up north.
He's pointing at his index finger.
Which is Sheboygan area.
Sheboygan, okay. Yeah.
Which is on Lake Huron, which is where the name
comes from, obviously. Yeah. But so how was going to shows when you were younger? Did you get to, with a lot of bands touring around that area, or did you have to like hop in a car with your mates? And
yeah, I mean, Detroit was not too far from where I grew up, so that was kind of where we went for shows. And some, East Lansing, which is a college town close to where I grew up, had some shows. Those were my first formative shows happened there.
Really?
Yeah.
What were they?
I think the... 1995 was kind of my big year for shows. My first big year for shows. I was 12.
Mm.
I had an older brother.
Oh, 83.
83.
Ah,
85. Okay. I had an older brother who was just a big, huge music fan, which was great.
And yeah.
He took me to see R.E.M. with Radiohead opening.
What? Was that one of your first shows?
That was my first big show, yeah.
Wow.
I know. It was amazing. And, you know, I loved R.E.M. And actually, that was really cool because at the time, Patti Smith was living in Detroit, so she did the encore with them.
What?
I know. It was a good...
Patti, I've only gotten to see her once, and I couldn't stop sobbing the whole time.
It's pretty incredible. Radiohead was the thing for me.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't really know them.
Yeah.
You know, I was just 12. But I was like, wow, this band and this guitar player in particular.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to do that. I got to play guitar. I got to...
You gotta do this.
Yeah.
So is that really the thing that made you want to start it? Or was your brother also into instruments and things like that?
No, he wasn't a player. He was just a fan. But then later that year, in 95, the high school had sort of a talent show where they came to the middle school and performed. So there's like a jazz band. And then these guys who had formed like a rock band played too. And I remember that kind of brought it closer to reality for me, where I was like, okay, this is a guy who's not much older than me.
I could do this.
Playing bass and singing and stuff. And I was like, okay. So that was the first band we started was that year, 1995. These same
guys.
You were
12.
12 years old. We played
That's very young, though. No.
Bat Mitzvah was our first show.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Was that just because, are you in the community? Or was that just because you got booked for that?
No. Despite my name, Benjamin Schneider, I'm not Jewish. But
I thought Schneider would be Jewish. Yeah,
but I'm not. But I had a lot of Jewish friends growing up, and
that's amazing.
This girl asked us to play her bat mitzvah.
I love that because all I remember from my like bar and bat mitzvah days was just like a rave, just like electronic, like British, because I grew up in South Africa, as I'm sure you can hear my accent, and so just like this weird kind of British electronic from the 90s, and that's why every time any of that comes on, I'm like suddenly a raver.
We were a little different style than that, but
you're saying cooler, basically.
Yeah,
I don't know. Say it. I'm not cool. No. But wait. So okay. So 12. This is. I'm sorry to be excited, but this is fascinating that your first one was Radiohead, because it took me years to see. I had to fly to Belgium. I think the first time I ever saw Radiohead was 2008.
Okay. I mean, it was all my brother. I take no credit for like knowing
incredible.
To go to that show. He just dragged me to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he was only 15, so my parents, I guess, were pretty cool.
What was playing like in your home? What were your parents into?
My parents were big, you know, Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, Neil Young kind of people, which was great.
Good people.
Definitely sunk in a lot.
Yeah.
But and at the time I wanted something a little more rocking, a little edgier, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
And especially because of the pacing, especially of Radiohead and how they paced their songs out and how unique it was from the get-go.
Yeah.
Also seeing it live is a completely different experience.
Yes, it was really incredible.
And then after that, so you started the band.
Yep.
And then how did you find your voice? Why did you decide to take that to the next level, I suppose?
I think in a lot of the bands we started at first, I was usually the bass player, not a singer or a guitar player. But I always liked writing songs. I always liked just writing melodies. And then eventually I think I felt like I had something to say, you know, to express with language. Started writing lyrics and stuff.
Did you feel like you had enough to say then, or did you feel like your life almost you had to experience more to just get enough on the paper, or do you find that just like things were flowing from when you were younger?
I think when I was younger it was more about melodies. I didn't really think too much about the words, you know. I think it did take experience and time to really, you know, because even though a lot of the stuff I write kind of spins off into fiction, I do think you need some sort of real experience as a place, as a starting point when you're writing a song.
Do you think that there's anything that you wouldn't sing about or wouldn't write about? Is there anything that doesn't really sit well with you to comment on? Because obviously now in this very scary world right now, there's things that people are maybe that they wouldn't have turned to that, you know, they suddenly want to talk about. So is there anything, I don't know, lately that you've been kind of mulling over?
Nothing's off limits for me as far as I know. I mean, some really personal stuff maybe... super autobiographical stuff makes me a little uncomfortable just because, as I've learned, as our profile has grown, just the idea of fame kind of scares the shit out of me, to be honest.
Does it?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is part of it, but...
No, but I mean, I also think those people who are like, it's your job, get used to it, are really just don't know what they're talking about, to be honest. Because nobody says you need to be in any way. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's hard. Yeah, it's a hard balance to strike.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah, it is. It is strange. I'm still sorting it out, to be honest. Yeah. Figuring out how to navigate
it. But also, it's so okay if you don't ever.
Yeah.
But you also have a particular type of fan, though.
They're lovely.
As far as
everyone I've met along the way has been just absolutely lovely. So no complaints at all there. It's just more of a...
Just knowing your life.
Yeah, just... Yeah. I love my anonymity in a lot of ways. I love being able to walk... through a busy place or an airport
and
or whatever,
and
just feel like I can blend in and do my thing.
Yeah,
which I still can do for the most part. I'm not saying I'm at all.
He's basically trying to. There's like fans waiting outside. They're trying to get into the trailer
that
we're in.
Paparazzi everywhere.
Paparazzi. I've been snapping pictures the whole time.
No,
but I hear what you're saying.
You see a glimpse of that, and it really is frightening to me. Anyway.
Yeah. Also, because I was listening to, I barely do, but I was listening to the Marc Maron podcast this morning, and he was talking to a comedian who has the stalker, and she was saying how like he found her home, and she's this teeny tiny comedian.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, and I can imagine also, especially because of how emotional some of the songs get that you have as well, people connect to it, of course, then double time.
Yep.
But have you ever had any fan that's been kind of not crossed the line, but made you feel
very
uncomfortable? Really?
Yeah, and I don't want to get specific about it, but we've definitely had some strange
experiences.
Yeah. For the most part, they've been, like I said, our fans have been the most lovely
and respectful.
Yeah, respectful people who are honestly just, you know, really excited about what we're doing, which is exciting for us to hear.
Exactly. Yeah. Is there any point where you met somebody, maybe another artist or somebody who has given you advice on this as such?
Not on that specifically. I think we have met people. We just, look, on our last record, we mixed with Dave Fridman, who's a producer who I have a lot of respect
for.
Yeah, amazing.
Wow.
Guy. Yeah. And
that's incredible. How was that?
It was amazing. I mean, creatively, he's just unbelievable. But more than that, he's found a really nice balance in his life between sort of being at this really high level artistically, but also having a very just great family life. And you know, he's involved in his community and lives kind of out in the country. And it's really nice. And it was just kind of inspiring to meet somebody who's at that high level of creativity and artistry, but still kind of really grounded.
Yeah, that's exactly what you feel like, though, to be honest. Like, just sitting next to you feel like that
nice
as well. Yeah, it's hard having that balance because you're touring all the time
and
you want your own family to, you know, go back to.
Yeah.
Where's everybody? In L.A.?
Yeah, we all live in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So your whole family is there.
Well, not my parents still live in Michigan.
Oh, they do?
But I go
there
a couple times a year.
Oh, amazing.
The one nice thing about touring is I do get to go through and see my family
and
friends around the country a little more. But But, you know, my wife and I live out in Los Angeles, and all the guys in the band who are like family, to be honest.
Yeah. And LA is a nice base to have. Mm-hmm. And then it's amazing that you get to go back to Michigan.
Yeah.
Is your brother still, like, telling you about music? Or is he like, well, no, he's famous now?
He's got kids now, so I'm trying to keep him up on music as much as I can. But we'll still get together and go to concerts a couple times a year and stuff, so...
What was the last one you got to see with him? Do you remember? I know it's like on the spot.
It was just a month ago, actually. The Pixies and Weezer were passing through his hometown.
It's cool.
It's a town in Indiana. So I flew out and we went, you know.
That's amazing.
Both being big Pixies fans and Weezer too. So it was cool.
And in terms of now going forward, you said that you didn't have much international experience. Do you feel like you want to tour more?
Yeah. We've been making the effort to get overseas more.
Where do you want to go?
Everywhere. We haven't been to Asia yet, which I think would be great. Go to Japan,
and
maybe China. We've done Europe a few times. We're going back again in October. Mm. We just did Australia for the second time.
How was that?
It was great.
Australia is amazing.
It is.
Wait, did you do a festival or a show?
Yeah, we did Splendor in the Grass.
How amazing is Splendor? I covered it like 2 years ago.
It's great.
One of my favorite festivals.
It was really nice.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, we don't do label support for touring really, so it's all up to us. So. It's expensive to get over there, but I know it's a good investment.
It's worth it. Yeah. Especially just to expand, you know, to not have, as you said, to not get bored and kind of
see
expand.
See something new.
Yeah.
It is amazing how you end up in the same alleys behind the same venues talking to the same local crew. And you're kind of like, this is deja vu.
Is there a place that you've played the most out of all the touring spots in the U.S.? Is there one that kind of sits?
We've kind of changed venues recently, so it's not all the same, but... For a long time, whenever we'd go through Salt Lake City, we'd play this tiny place called Kilby Court, which is like, I don't know, 150 people or something. And I just remember going there for like the fifth time and being like, you know, I love this place, but...
I love you, but...
I'd like
you know,
to play a new venue if I can.
Yeah, I suppose. But there is, I think when you start probably going more overseas, you'll probably be like, I just want my Salt Lake City back, you know? Because totally. You just want like what you can't have.
I think that's very wise.
That's amazing.
That's very true.
So where else do you go from here? Do you know your schedule that well?
Yes. Tomorrow we'll play in Boston.
That's
which
cool.
Which is a city we've played a lot in as well. And then I think I get to go home for a couple of days.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite place that you play in the U.S.? You can say one, because they won't be mad.
No,
the
I
others,
know.
You know?
What I always think about is a place that I actually haven't played yet.
Okay.
Which is in Detroit, a venue I used to see shows at all the time, St. Andrew's Hall. Which
yeah.
It's kind of like a classic place where I saw a lot of my first shows. And for some reason, we've never gotten to play there. So I always think, I mean, it's always great playing in Detroit. You know, I've got so much family there.
Yeah.
And everybody comes out.
It's nice, to have that.
But this one venue has been elusive, so hopefully someday. I'll
yeah. Well, this is your public announcement, essentially.
St. Andrews, please call me.
Report, please.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I usually ask about pre-show rituals, but I'm kind of intrigued about what you do after shows. Mm. Is there a certain thing that you tend to do that kind of sets you back into a place of, like, not manicness, you know, from the crowd's energy and stuff like that?
If we're not overwhelmed with, you know, friends or colleagues after a show, in big cities that tends to be the case where you go backstage and it's just
everybody.
So many people to greet and talk to, which is nice. I love it, but it can be kind of overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite kind of show is one where there's none of that afterwards. I can sit in the green room for maybe half an hour and have a drink, and then I always like just go out for a walk if I can in the city before going to bed.
Are you a bit of a loner?
It's as simple as that.
You're a bit of a loner.
I mean, yeah, after a long day of being together with everybody,
crazy.
It's nice to just have some time
you
alone.
You just need time.
Yeah.
How do you get away? Well, how do you then zone out when you're on like a tour bus?
Well, reading. Yeah, a lot of reading.
What are you reading at the moment?
Right now, I'm reading actually some James Ellroy short stories.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice sort of bit of light stuff to just kind of end the day with. Yeah.
But do you land up being together with the guys a lot? Like...
Yeah. Look, since we've known each other so long that we don't have that sort of awkwardness of like feeling like we have to hang out all the time.
Or
it's just natural. If someone wants to go out for a drink and you want to go for a drink or go bowling or something, you will.
But
we don't feel the pressure to spend every minute together or anything, which is nice.
Absolutely.
Everybody's got their own thing going on.
Yeah, especially because knowing the boundaries, as you said, you're like past that awkward phase. Yeah. So knowing the boundaries already is really, I can imagine, quite easy for you. Is there a particular song that you are finding quite challenging now to play live from the new album? Like, is there anything that is a little bit more difficult, or has everything fit into your kind of discography pretty neatly?
We're always pretty hypercritical of everything, but I think we're doing
pretty...
Which
I think is actually a really good thing.
I hope so.
I think it's a good thing.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think we're doing pretty well. You know, we change things up constantly and try to make the song sound better. But luckily, one thing we've struggled with a lot is just, you know, the sound in the venue, the actual front of house sound, it's consistent every night. And now that we can spend a little more on tour and bring our own gear and everything, it's been easier.
Makes a difference.
It does, yeah.
Well, I hope that you have a good show.
Thank you. Really
exciting that it's on such a big stage.
I can't wait. I'm really pumped.
So wait, we were talking about Pearl Jam.
Uh-huh.
So you didn't get to see them?
I didn't, because we were on... before then, but they were on like 1 a.m. or something, and we had to leave at 5 a.m.
Like 12, they were on midnight.
Yeah, we had to leave at like, go up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to France.
Alice in Chains. Jack White.
But this was a festival in Portugal called Nos Alive.
Oh, yeah.
Nos Alive.
Do you want to introduce yourself so that the listeners know who you
are? My name is Bob Hardy, and I play the bass in Franz Ferdinand.
Hello, my name is Julian Corey, and I also play in Franz Ferdinand, but not the bass. I play keyboard and guitar and sing as well.
Welcome to the band.
Thanks very much.
It's been now, what, a year? Two years.
2 years in August, and we're in August now, so it's been 2 years.
Do you feel like you're still the new kid on the block?
Sometimes, but no, I don't know. I feel like it's a good unit now. It's like the five of us we've gigged a lot now, so...
We've played about 1,000 shows, I think.
About 1,000. This will be coming up to 1,000, yeah.
I actually was looking on Setlist FM to see like how many times you've played certain songs, because seen you from I think the first time I saw was 2004.
Wow! I'm like, is this competition? See if I can guess how many times.
Yeah, you should.
So take me out. But this is also according to Setlist.
1,700 times.
It says only 800.
Really?
Well, wait, I wrote it down. It says like 800, but it's probably loads more.
It's probably more. I mean, I don't know how setlist.com works. Is it like people just do
it's
it?
It's like user aggregated, yeah.
So not necessarily every set might not go up there.
No.
You will definitely have played it more than 800 times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just sound. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. How many times have you played it? Do you know?
I reckon... Well, Rick, actually, our front of house engineer, has been keeping track of how many shows we've done.
Really?
And it's... I mean, it's coming up to the 200 mark, I think. So probably about 150 times.
Do you ever get a little bit annoyed or bored?
I don't get bored of that song.
Is there any song that you get really bored by? Like,
bored is the wrong word.
Well, maybe just that it isn't
There's
as
songs
fresh.
That I look less forward to playing in a set than others.
Yeah.
Because of the bass parts?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Thank you for not yawning.
There are some songs that I enjoy more than others, for sure. But... and then, like, some gigs I enjoy more than others. Like, some nights I really enjoy it.
What makes the most perfect gig? Like, why would a gig come together?
It's really hard to say, but, like, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you just come off stage and you're like, that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, when it's like that, it's, like, honestly the best thing in the world. It's so good.
That happened for me 2 nights ago. We were playing in Indianapolis at this little club called The Vogue. Mm. We'd never been there before, and it's this legendary little club. Mm. And it can't be very big, what, 1,000 people? Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And, the night before, we played Lollapalooza to, you know, tens of thousands or whatever.
That's my new hometown now.
All right, okay, nice.
I'm in Chicago now.
It was a good show.
It's a bit crazy.
We drove down to Indianapolis, and all day just hanging around this venue in the tour bus, because it was so small, it was not really a dressing room. And I was just kind of like, you know, just bumming around the town a little bit. And then went on stage and had one of the best gigs I've had for ages, just completely randomly. I mean, I guess it felt like a real Friday night party, you know?
Yeah. A lot of people were there to see us and to just have a good time, because they say that bands don't really come to Indianapolis, so they were like really excited that we were there, and like
Why did you decide to go there? What was the...
Our booking agent booked it.
He decided for us.
we're here to do Oshiaga and Lollapalooza and then a bunch of our own shows. And it was a show to do in between Lollapalooza and this. But this last couple of years, we've been to quite a few places in the North America that we've never been to before. And that's been really exciting.
Do you find like your hometown... When was the last time you played in
Glasgow? February the 15th.
How is that, playing to your hometown?
It was a brilliant show.
Yeah, really good. Really good. That's one of my favourites of the UK tour.
Are you also from Glasgow as well?
No, I'm from England.
Okay.
I've lived in Glasgow for over 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So like, I feel like a sort of adopted Glaswegian. Yeah.
I'm also from England, but I've lived in Glasgow for nearly 20 years.
So where did you grow up? Tell me.
I grew up in Bradford in West Yorkshire.
I grew up in a town called Ware, which is just north of London.
Yeah. I have a friend who lived there.
Really?
Yes. It's very, very unknown. A lot of people don't know about it.
It's quite a boring place. Yeah. I mean, like, not to slag off Ware.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it until...
And it's also like, oh, where are you from? Oh, Ware. It's like, oh, hilarious.
Oh, Ware.
But, it was fine. The good thing was how close to London it was, so you got to London quite easily.
So when you were younger, can I ask you about the first gigs that you ever went to?
You may.
Could be two parts, either the first one you ever went to or maybe the one that was most formative for you as a musician.
I'll tell you that the first one that I went to was a band called David Devant and His Spirit Wife, which is this like... but from Brighton and this very theatrical art school band. It was kind of they had like a hit in the 90s with a song that was on the radio quite a lot, and then they had like a bit of a cult following. Mm. And they were playing in my hometown, and I had a fake ID to go and see them because it was like over 18s, and went to that. It was amazing. Like, you know, blew up. It was the first thing I'd seen. It was so loud. I remember my ears ringing for days afterwards. But since then, like this last couple of years, I've sort of become friends with the singer on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And we were playing in Brighton, which is his hometown, this year. And I tweeted him and said, you know, do you want to come down to the show and I'll put you on the guest list? He's like, oh, yeah. He said, yeah, I'd love to. Can I bring my boys? And it was their first gig. Like his son's first gig.
Did you tell him that?
Yeah,
that,
of course. Yeah.
But that, I mean, that never happens. That is incredible.
It's great, isn't it?
Did you prep that story? That's a great story.
Yeah.
Wow.
David Devant and His Spirit Wife.
heavily prepped.
Heavily prepped.
Yeah, very
for
media
hours.
Savvy. Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean by prepped? I mean, do you mean I had it in my head?
I think a lot of people
I have
struggle.
A memory.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my memory is very awful, so I commend you for having such
Thanks.
A good memory.
Yeah.
What was yours, Julian?
You were signed quite a lot.
I feel like there was an earlier one on this, but the one that I remember was a band called Gomez. In Birmingham
band.
in the academy there.
Was it in 1998?
No, I think it was slightly later than that. But I was a massive Gomez fan. Mm. Massive. And I went with my dad because I didn't have any friends.
How old were you?
Probably about 16.
Wow.
There must have been shows before that, but that maybe not. Maybe that was my first gig.
Was it?
The Birmingham Academy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you haven't seen that you've wanted to see? Because obviously you guys tour so much and you've been able to meet, as you said, you missed Pearl Jam.
I mean,
course,
I would. Yeah, I'd like to see Pearl Jam just because I was such a big fan when I was sort of a teenager. Who else have I never seen? I guess some like huge kind of artists. I've never seen Paul Simon. I'd love to see him, but I think he's doing some kind of farewell tour now, so I'm probably missed him.
Bruno Mars was on at
Lollapalooza.
And I would have loved to have seen that. Like, I've got a bit of a thing.
A crush on
me
Bruno
too.
Mars.
Yeah. Maybe not a crush, a musical crush.
Musical crush.
Yeah, a little bit of a man crush. Yeah, he's hot.
He's fantastic, though, in terms of just a show. But, I mean, the same thing with you guys in terms of, like, your fans go so crazy at your shows. It is amazing to see, and I think that you keep the energy up as well. Is there a moment where before you've walked onto the stage where you like this feels?
No, not really. I feel like it is important for us as a band, or at least me as an outsider coming in. Like it was obvious that it, like. The shows were... It was important that the shows were really high energy. Because I remember when we were rehearsing and we were all quite calm and it's like there's a lot of space between songs, and then it might have been even that first show we did and I was like... Came off, I was like, oh my goodness, like how far... Like fast between songs and like how much energy there was on stage, and like I would loved it and totally got into it. But yeah, like the fans, it's great that they go along with it. And especially that show a couple of nights ago, they were really on board. That was a super high energy show. It was really good.
Yeah. I feel sometimes the high energy comes from other band members. They aren't me. I'm kind of very rooted in the bass end, you know.
What was the first show with friends then?
We played in our friend's bedroom. In a flat on Tucky Hall Street in Glasgow above Nice and Sleazy's, which is a famous pub music venue. And we played four songs to our friends, and then we played them again because some people arrived late. And it was terrifying.
Just keep playing the songs on
loop. We played four songs twice. And then
I love that.
What were those songs?
What were those songs?
It was Michael, Jacqueline.
Michael, you've also played loads of times. I saw that also. 700 and something.
Tell Her Tonight, and I can't remember the fourth one. Paul, no. Might have been Alf Axer, but I don't know because I had to play octaves in that song, and I couldn't play octaves then.
And was Paul playing guitar at that point?
No, that had finished a long time ago, before we got round to gigging.
Okay,
right. That little.
Was there like a cover charge?
No, it was an art show that our friends were putting on, and then we were kind of like the band that were playing it.
And so then when was the first big kind of big stage?
Everything seems big after you've played in your friend's bedroom.
Of course.
So,
but paying fans?
Of our own shows. I guess one that stands out in Glasgow was the first time we played the QM, which was April 2004, I think. Oh. And our record had been out, our album had been out. Mm. Maybe it was early in April, I can't remember. And it was really magic. It was like, it felt enormous. And it's not that big a venue. It's like 700, 800, something like that, 900 maybe. And it was like, you know, rammed and people going wild. And it was just like, what is going on? You know, that was pretty special.
Were you hesitant at all? Perhaps this is to both of you in just the beginning. Because obviously some people have different relationships with touring. Mm. And they feel like they just can't handle the constant, and especially as you guys are a touring band.
Yeah, it was just a direct continuation of art school. So, I mean, we signed our record contract in June, and I graduated in July.
Oh, wow.
So I was sort of partying pretty hard through the last few years of art school, and I just kept going, really. And so it wasn't really much of a change.
But you knew that it was going to happen.
I knew we were going to go on tour, yeah. I didn't know, you know. That we were gonna.
Didn't know it was gonna be forever.
Yeah.
did you have that goal in mind? Did you have that dream?
At one point, because we played with a few bands. Like I remember on the weekend I graduated from art school, I did my degree show. We supported the Libertines at the Barrowlands. We were like hometown support band, whatever. And
Libertines in the 2000s.
2003 would have been.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I remember they had a tour bus outside and it seemed like the most glamorous thing in the world. And I remember leaving the venue after having a few drinks and John, the bass player, kind of like, I'm coming downstairs and there's some fans waiting outside for the photograph with them. And I was like, that looks so cool. Like they've got, you know, like people actually like want to speak to him. And he's going to get on that tour bus, fall asleep. And they had a day sheet on the wall. And that seemed like the most exotic thing in the world. It was like, you know.
Like an actual schedule.
Yeah, schedule. Yeah. It was like, you know, tonight, Glasgow, you know, blah, 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 load out 1 a.m. and tomorrow, you know, Newcastle, whatever it was. And I was like, that's so glamorous. You get to go to Newcastle tomorrow.
And now do you think it's as glamorous?
Sometimes I do get those moments. I mean, the other day, like 2 days ago, when we were playing the Vogue, and I was kind of like, just, you know, sound check looking around, and there was one of our day sheets I could see from stage. I was like, and I remember, you know, thinking, I remember when I first saw a day sheet, and I thought this at the time, and how exciting that was. And then I did kind of like getting a bit of kind of like thinking, oh, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Is there a place that you haven't played yet that you would still like? Was that a bug?
I was trying to catch it. that wasn't like.
So what he did was he gestured in the air. Like,
oh,
like,
I know.
Please, can I talk? And I saw you laugh. me. Basically,
for the listeners at home, I just snapped my hand in the air. I want to say something. No, I don't. It's fine. Yeah.
So tell me, as I was saying, is there any place that you haven't been, or at least a place that you feel like, I mean, because you've toured pretty much everywhere, right?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking at the end of this year, we will have done pretty much every major continent except for Africa.
Mm, we've never played in Africa.
Yeah, so like South Africa, maybe.
They would go nuts. I can't believe. Have you never played there?
We've never been, no.
That's so strange, because it really is your market. Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess it's kind of odd. It's not really on the way to anywhere,
exactly,
so we've never really
there's
kind
nothing
of
in the immediate vicinity, yeah.
I've always wanted to play in Alaska.
I wanted to just go there.
I've asked our agent, and he said no.
What? Why? He said no.
He said there isn't really a market.
And then lastly, because we have to wrap up, is there like a dream lineup? I know you mentioned Paul Simon.
For like a festival?
No, I suppose just for yourself to watch shows. If there's somebody who you've maybe missed who's passed away or something that you would have loved to see live.
I only really got into REM after they'd broken up.
I think majority of people probably did,
And so I quite like to watch an REM show.
My favourite band in the world is a band called Deerhoof from San Francisco.
I just interviewed them.
Did you?
So Ed has the most beautiful hair in the world.
Yeah.
And you must listen to the podcast episode.
I should.
It is an hour and a half long.
Oh, amazing.
Most of them are.
They're quite verbose.
That's why very good. They are.
I was only 10, like 15 minutes.
I don't know why.
That's a shame, because we could talk for
shame.
Longer.
It's a shame. I could ask lots more questions. But Deerhoof are amazing. Can you talk a little bit about them?
I got into them university, I think, and just knew vaguely that about. I'd known vaguely about them for a while as a band that I might quite like, and then I got a record, and I was like, everything about this is good. Like, it's
everything.
like they have this amazing combination of sort of. And it's something that I think it's good for our band to think about, because they sort of, they've been going for years, like 20 years. But like they still they're still this like DIY sort of cottage industry, and they're all really on it. Mm-hmm. But they have like, they're so exploratory with the sounds, like every album is different. They're all having a blast
doing
it.
But you can still hear it's Deerhoof.
Yeah, Deerhoof-y. And they have so much fun. And it's like, but it's like really high concept music, but at the same time they don't take it too seriously, and it's really
absolutely
super accessible and fun. And that's just the best. Like any music that's like different and doing its own thing and like musically complicated, but that has like this element of fun and like. So, like, I think they're amazing. And I would love to see them play, and I'd love to hang out
with
them.
Is this your public announcement to say that you'd like to perform
can
with
we
them?
Please be friends?
Yeah, can we please be friends?
Friends and to play music together.
Yeah, be awesome.
Go to the mic, say yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the very good time.
Sorry, it was brief.
It's okay. This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kivel, and we'd like to thank Billy Yost and The Kickback for our theme song, Rube, and buy their music at thekickbackband.com. Lexi Frame for the artwork, Daniel Brater and Dean Berger for the additional sound design, and the Consequence Podcast Network, where you'll find a bunch of other amazing shows. Hey! If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us, and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod, and generally just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again. Miss you already.
Consequence Podcast Network.